Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TIC, and also Light 100.5 WRCH. We're going to be talking all about hospitals this morning, particularly their finances and how they're doing since the COVID pandemic has started. Our guest this morning is Paul Kidwell, Senior Vice President of Policy at the Connecticut Hospital Association. Paul, it's a pleasure to have you on the show this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Morgan. And I appreciate you taking some time to chat about hospitals in the morning.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about here. And, you know, I don't want to dig too much into the specifics, but I do want to get an overall overview of where hospitals are here in the state of Connecticut financially. I know that there are challenges. I know that there are also some good bits of news as well. But let's just start off with an overall summary of what the financial report released earlier this week showed about how hospitals have been doing the last 3 years here in Connecticut.
Yeah, so the report that you referenced that we released earlier this week shows that, unfortunately, 2022 was the worst year financially for Connecticut hospitals since the beginning of the pandemic. And we know going into the pandemic in 2019, early 2020, that hospitals and health systems were in a fairly decent financial position going into the pandemic. And we know, from our experience in the pandemic, that was really important to the success we had as a state in really meeting the challenge of the pandemic. So if you remember, some 3 years ago now, back in March of 2020, hospitals across the state were able to basically turn all of their attention to pandemic response. Treating in the early days COVID-19 patients, sort of understanding the treatment that they needed, and then really being able to withstand wave after wave of those patients, and then also managing through the significant increased expenses that came along with the pandemic. So you'll recall, getting PPE was extremely tough, and prices were increasing pretty significantly. We had to start slowing down, non-urgent procedures because we needed to really handle and treat those COVID patients. So it was really important that we were in a pretty good financial spot. Now, 3 years later, we're seeing really significant expenses that are continuing to increase. Our certainly revenue has not kept pace, and we're seeing significant workforce issues that are exacerbating all of this. So it's a challenging time financially for hospitals and health systems across the state.
I know that a number of organizations and companies and even state agencies had money set aside for essentially a rainy day. And, were hospitals like that? Did they have money stashed away in case there was a major public health emergency or some other kind of crisis to affect hospitals, in this case, COVID-19 in 2020? So were they able to have money set aside initially for an emergency like that, that maybe has been depleted or hurt over the last 3 years?
Yeah, so, and that's what hospitals and health systems plan for on an annual basis, is if they can make a slim margin, so a couple percentage margin, they not only can reinvest in the services they're providing, expand the services they're providing, but they can also be prepared for those things that are unexpected. And so going into the pandemic, they were able to use sort of stronger financial position to meet the need. That is very different than where we are today. So if you look across the state, hospitals across the state collectively had about a negative 1% margin in 2022.
What about inflation in the last year that has gotten particularly bad? You guys were still dealing with COVID, although not quite like we were in 2020 about a year ago. But then inflation comes, and it seems like it's been one costly thing after another.
Families across Connecticut have experienced inflation in their own household budgets. Hospitals experience similar inflationary impacts. It's been extraordinary. So our expenses are $3.5 billion higher than the pre-pandemic levels, mainly driven by inflation. So that has affected medical supplies, pharmaceuticals, energy, all those costs that go into providing that service to patients, all of it has increased. And, while inflation may have abated or at least leveled off a bit, we're still seeing pretty record levels of inflation, than we've seen in decades past. So it's a significant risk if inflation continues as it has. We're going to continue to see these expenses rise.
Well, as you mentioned just a few minutes ago, hospitals saw price increases even before widespread inflation that affected Connecticut and United States residents and businesses across the board. But also, you think back to 2020, there's a rush to get PPE and cleaning products and even equipment in some cases, and those costs went through the roof, right?
Absolutely, through the roof. I mean, not only could you not find them, but when you were able to, the price of those of that medical equipment and medical goods were significantly higher than we had ever experienced in the past. At the same time, where your revenues have either been depressed because in those early days of COVID, you had really restricted other types of services, or in our case now, we have a very inelastic revenue stream. So our government payers, Medicare and Medicaid, we don't negotiate rates with the state or with the federal government. They tell us what they're going to pay for those services. And we renegotiate with the private commercial insurance companies, not on an annual basis, but on a 3 to 5 year basis. So our contracts are set. Now, when your contracts are set for revenue, but your expenses are increasing, every month, let alone every year, you can see how that could get you in some pretty significant financial trouble quickly.
What was the role of extra government money that the federal government passed within the first month of COVID back in 2020? How did that affect hospitals?
So that was extraordinarily helpful. Without those resources, we would have been seeing significantly larger losses than we did, especially in 2021. So that assistance was critical to sustaining the hospital system in Connecticut and across the country. Now that money is gone. Those funds are not available any longer. And we don't anticipate that the federal government is going to be providing any additional assistance in that way. Although we're seeking it, and so we're in a different period now where we know that real vital source of federal dollars is no longer available.
What about patients being seen more and being seen longer when they actually do go to a hospital or even a doctor's appointment? But hospitals in particular, they are seeing patients on average staying longer now. Is that a shift in illnesses? Is that a shift in response? What's going on there?
Sure. And some of it is a result of, and if you listen to our clinical officials at the hospitals, they'll tell you some of this is remnant of individuals during that real height of the COVID time not seeking that regular source of care. So, we see conditions that may have gone undiagnosed. And now as individuals feel more comfortable coming back to seek care either in their physician's office or at the hospital, we're seeing that some of those conditions require more medical attention than they otherwise would have, or an individual with a chronic condition, who may have foregone a little bit of care over that time, Now they're coming back for care, and that's requiring longer lengths of stay. And your listeners probably say, well, why does that affect the financial health of your hospital if people are staying there longer? And it's a little counterintuitive, but to the extent we have individuals in the hospital who are staying longer, you know, hospitals get paid for a sort of one length of stay. It's usually a lump sum amount for caring for that individual. The resources required to care for someone in a longer period of time often are outpace what the what we're being paid for that care. Additionally, it really from a patient care perspective begins to back up our places like the emergency department. And I'm sure listeners, if you've been in a hospital emergency department recently, probably experienced that where because individuals in the hospital are staying longer. Means that someone in the emergency department who may need a hospital bed upstairs in the hospital, we can't get them there as quickly as we would like because we have patients who are in the hospital longer, or who we can't get into a nursing home because they're experiencing similar workforce issues that we are.
What about utilities and the effect that increased utilities, speaking with Paul Kidwell, Senior Vice President of Policy at the Connecticut Hospital Association, people are saying that their bills have gone up for electricity and other utilities as well, water, and hospitals sure do go through a lot of electricities, and you have a lot of machines helping people and surgeries and lights and all of that. How have utilities played a role in increased costs?
Yeah, that's we often say that hospitals can be sort of aggregators of cost, and certainly utilities and is one of those costs where we don't control those costs. It's we have to, like you said, we use a great deal of energy to provide the care, and that goes into that cost base, sort of adding in those additional dollars that either haven't been budgeted for or we're not able to sort of recoup through revenue. So it's absolutely up there with medical supplies and pharmaceuticals as one of the prime generators of cost.
It doesn't seem like the answer to the question I'm about to ask is yes, but I do have to ask, is it foreseeable that hospitals are going to be able to renovate, whether it is to maybe adopt greener forms of electricity, such as solar or wind or something like that, to help offset the higher cost of utilities, or perhaps to add more rooms and beds, maybe cut down on ER times by adding more capacity to take in more patients? Or is it financially not possible at this time for many of the hospitals in Connecticut?
So I think it's a continual opportunity to assess. What is the community need and how can we meet it? But I think you're keying in on one of the concerns about having an industry in financial distress, which is, can we respond to those needs? Can you expand capacity to meet that need? Can you put more services into the community so people have sort of closer access to the care they require? We're always assessing our ability to meet those demands, and that's ongoing. Some of the investments we make are long planned out, and we want to continue to pursue those. But when you're losing such significant amounts of money every year, you do have to start thinking about where those future investments can and should be made. When you noted around, adding beds, I think one of the things that is top of mind is the workforce and the ability to attract and hire, that skilled clinical labor. And I'll tell you, it's pretty tough right now. Across the state, we have around 2,000 open nursing positions, and it's difficult to find nurses in Connecticut right now. And so that comes into play as well as we think about how can we expand that care.
When we talk about adding more nurses and hiring more nurses. Obviously, there's a shortage, not just here in Connecticut, but across the country. There are also travel nurses and agencies, but again, only so many of those to go around. Does that result in more money being paid to nurses and people who are being hired to be part of the staff if there's a shortage? You know, are you paying these people more and the money isn't there? What's going on with that issue?
Sure. So it's certainly over the last 3 years, we have increased salaries and benefits to attract more clinical staff and non-clinical staff alike, and retention bonuses and signing bonuses, et cetera. It also means we have had to expend far more dollars on, as you noted, those travel nurses. And for folks who don't potentially know what that is, it's temporary nurses that come in on a sort of finite contract, and they usually work for a travel company that the hospitals pay for that nursing services on a temporary basis. Those costs, have increased for our hospitals, over $500 million dollars. And so, you do what you can, because we need to make sure that we're, safely staffing and making sure we can provide that clinical care. But on staffing, we need to look at the long game. We, as a state, need to invest in more opportunities for education for nurses, in making sure that we have that the teachers available to train those nurses, because this problem with nursing especially is not going to go away without some real intervention.
I've heard a number of problems regarding nursing and maybe why people are leery of going into it. You've got long hours, 12-hour shifts. There has been a lot of talk in the news and elsewhere among burnout in the industry because of the COVID pandemic being very difficult on nurses. I don't even know if it is a financial problem or what messaging would have to be changed to get more people into the very important work of nursing and, as you've mentioned, skilled clinical care. Do you have any idea what could be done about that?
Yeah, we do. I think, we certainly acknowledge that the past 3 years has been very difficult on hospital staff generally. Tons of long hours, being short staff, it's difficult. That said, I think we're in a time where we're thinking about how do you form a clinical team to offer the best care? How can you reduce burden on nursing so that they're spending less time in inputting information into a chart, or can you provide some assistance with other trained staff to help take off some of the burden of the daily tasks that we're asking them to do, but really trying to understand those new models of care that help reduce the burden and stress that they're feeling today, so that they can really focus in on what they were trained to do, which is provide that real bedside care to patients using their training, and so I think there are lots of ways that we are working to make sure that the environment in which they work is supportive and fulfilling. You're right, it's not all financial. Much of it is that work.
What about our comparison to the situation going on regionally and nationally, or even internationally, when it comes to the financial state of hospitals? Is Connecticut in line? Is Connecticut worse off?
Yeah, so the whole nation, hospitals across the nation are certainly feeling similar financial effects to Connecticut hospitals. Unfortunately, what we found in our study is that Connecticut hospitals are doing somewhat worse than our peer hospitals across the country. Some of that is because we have really taken the brunt of the COVID pandemic over the last 3 years. We experienced pretty significant wave after wave. Some of that is because we have a workforce that is slightly older than the national average, and so we have some specific workforce challenges that we certainly need to work through. But we are doing slightly worse if you look across the country.
Paul Kidwell is the Senior Vice President of Policy at the Connecticut Hospital Association. He's our guest this morning on Face Connecticut. You know, Paul, we are in the middle of the 2023 legislative session. Is there anything coming out of the legislative session that the Connecticut Hospital Association would like to see passed that might help hospitals in this situation?
Yeah, thanks for asking. And we are right in the middle of that session, and we're talking directly with state legislative leaders and about the things that we think could be helpful. Number one is assistance with our workforce, and that's one, some financial assistance directly to hospitals to help us retain that workforce. And to really manage through these significant costs that we've been talking about this morning. But two, a real emphasis on investments in our state colleges and universities to train the healthcare workforce of the future, to invest in our workforce boards across the state, to do those the certificate programs that train the staff that we need to get these hospitals providing good patient care. So, workforce is really front and center and assistance to that end. The other is, we think that there are some really promising pieces of legislation that would start to address some of the real abuses of the prior authorization process that health insurance companies use, in our mind, to delay needed care. And I think your listeners probably have some experience with trying to get a medical procedure or some care than having to, work through a pretty arbitrary and antiquated prior authorization process with their health insurance company. So we're excited about working on that issue as well.
Last question, because we are running low on time, Paul, and I really appreciate your added insight this morning on Face Connecticut. Is there any possibility, because of the financial situation, that things might have gotten so bad that we might start to see hospital closures? Maybe certain services will be stopped at certain sites, or perhaps ownership changes? Is any of that on the table at this time?
Yeah, so we're, tomorrow or the next day, we don't anticipate any hospital closures. And our hospitals are doing their best to manage through this exceedingly difficult financial situation. Our report really was to sound that alarm, though, to make people aware. Here's where hospitals are. So we certainly today, tomorrow, don't anticipate a hospital closure. I think hospitals, as they do routinely, are thinking about what the future financially looks like and what does that mean for services in the community. And I think the real challenging part of that is in one of the hospital representatives this week said it best. Our communities are telling us they want more services in the community. They need us to do more at a time when we're looking at negative margins and huge increases in expenses, and trying to figure out how do we offer the community what they need at a time when we might not have the financial wherewithal to do that. So, we wanted to, our report this week was to sound that alarm, make sure people were aware. We think we can get through it together, but it's going to take some assistance from the state as well.
Paul, I really appreciate your time this morning. Any final thoughts?
We are there for our communities, and we're just so appreciative that our communities have been there for us. And we're here to provide excellent patient care, and that's what we're excited to do.
All right. Thank you, Paul. We'll do another update down the line. I appreciate it.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.